the federal government, for the first time, is measuring its greenhouse gas output across the entire set of operations. Green buildings make a huge difference. Buildings themselves in the United States account for 40% of the total energy consumption and 70% of the electrical consumption. If we can make improvements in that arena, greenhouse gases go down dramatically. The other thing that happens in buildings is that you have the confluence of the way people work, what they're doing, what they're accomplishing, and then the housing within which that happens. So you've got this interplay between human behavior and the physical environment. If we can affect both of those through good environments, we can improve productivity, we can reduce the cost to the taxpayer, and we can improve the product that's delivered to the taxpayer. I mean, this is a tremendous opportunity, and it's an exciting place to be.
Now, high performance buildings, does that refer strictly to their energy consumption and greenness, or are there other aspects that make a total high performance building?
A total high performance building is one that really supports the work of the people in the building. That's the main reason that buildings exist. So when we talk about a high performing building, we need to be looking at what goes on inside the building and the interrelationship between the building and the people and the mission of the agency that's in there, or the corporation, or whatever else it is that's going on inside the building.
So how are you able to budget that when it comes to spending and financial management? The role of efficiency, how does that work into that budgeting?
Every single, I'll just start with GSA and then we'll extrapolate to the other agencies, but every single project that we propose to Congress and GSA is budgeted to be a high-performing building. And in fact, we make some commitments not only about energy efficiency and consumption, but also fossil fuels, what kind of new technologies are going into the building. And then the main thing that we need to be doing going forward is looking at how we get the existing building stock to improve, not just concentrating on new buildings. I mean, people have a tendency to think of this budgeting question you just asked as a capital budget question. The big opportunity is in operation maintenance of existing buildings and how we can make them perform better. That is tricky because it's not as glitzy and glamorous as a brand new building, but the opportunity is there. As Mayor Bloomberg says in New York City, 80% of the buildings you're going to see in 50 years are already here. We need to concentrate on the existing stock. And that's true in the federal government as well. I don't know whether the number is exactly 80%, but the vast majority of buildings that we have in our inventory today are the ones that we'll see for the next generation. So that's where we need to concentrate. There are a number of different ways of budgeting through those. I mean, the accomplishments of the Recovery Act, you're going to see both in the Department of Defense and in GSA some pretty significant improvements as a result of that investment. And it's not just jobs, but it's also improvement in the performance of the building, particularly in energy conservation, that you're going to see cropping up over the next couple of years.
We're speaking with Kevin Kampscher. He's director of the Office of Federal High Performance Green Buildings at GSA. And you mentioned the relative ages of buildings, and they do last a long time. And, of course, the inventory of the federal government ranges from almost 18th century buildings to the very latest green award-winning buildings that GSA has overseen construction of. So where does the highest payout, do you think, initially come from?
Well, actually, it's interesting you ask that because it's really the buildings in the 70s and 80s that are the worst performers. Ironically, some of the older buildings, and as it's like our Commissioner Bob Peck says occasionally, sometimes you got to go back to our grandfathers and they really knew what they were doing. Some of the older buildings that have narrow sections, lots of daylighting, the ability to have cross ventilation, they actually perform better from an energy standpoint than some of the 70s and 80s buildings, where I don't think we quite understood all of the interrelationships of building parts. In fact, it was the 70s and 80s buildings that created this difficult problem called sick building syndrome, which is, you know, when the building doesn't quite operate as well and it begins to deteriorate both interior and exteriorly. So I think the biggest payoff really is taking a look at where you can make the changes most effectively. I mean, the building I'm in right now, for example, is a 1918 building. The design for its renovation is going to result in reducing the energy consumption by almost two-thirds. That is to say, it'll use one-third less, the same amount of energy as it's using right now. That's a huge payoff, but it's a whole building renovation. You can do a lot with building operations. There's a number of things that you can do just by making changes in the way the building is operated that can save a significant amount in energy. I'm focusing on energy because it's what we measure the most. There are other things that you can do with indoor air quality. There is technological improvements in lighting. I would say that almost every office building that's more than 5 years old in its lighting system, you can make a significant improvement in both the quality of the lighting, the performance of the lighting for the people in the building, and the energy consumption. So lighting is a huge, huge payoff. If I were going to pick just one thing to work on, I would sort of be flipping a coin between building operation and maintenance on the one hand and lighting retrofits on the other.